Okay. 1 Chronicles 12. We've been looking at a series we've entitled The Warrior Chronicles, basically going through 1 Chronicles 12, which gives us a list of mighty men and warriors who helped David become king. And so we've been looking individually at these various men, these various tribes, and attributes of what it takes to be a warrior for God. This will be the final lesson, number 6, and today's lesson is called Leadership, Place, and Impact. And so I want to get some scriptures. Isaac is going to read 1 Chronicles 12, 34 through 38. Will read Judges 17, 6. Daniel, can you read verse 37? 1 Chronicles 12, 37. 1 Chronicles 12, 37. Colby. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10. Brian Mitchell, 1 Corinthians 16, 15. And Duane, 1 Chronicles 12, 38. Okay, let's read our main verse. These are the final verses of the chapter in this long list. 1 Chronicles 12, 34 through 38.
Of Naphtali, 1,000 captains, and with them 37,000 with shield and spear. And of the Danites, who could keep battle formation, 28,600. Of Asher, those who could go out to war, able to keep battle formation, 40,000. Of the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, from the other side of the Jordan, 120,000 armed for battle with every kind of weapon of war. All these men of war who could keep ranks came to Hebron with a loyal heart to make David king over Israel. And all the rest of Israel were of one mind to make David king.
Okay, leadership, place, and impact. Let's begin. Let's talk about accepting leadership. One of the important principles of life is that life requires leadership. And when no one is in charge in any human relationship or gathering, if no one is providing direction, then chaos is the result. Judges 17:6.
In those days, there was no king in Israel, but every man did what was right in his own eyes.
Okay, this is actually the theme of the book of Judges. The book of Judges is in one way a depressing book because it's just failure after failure, repeated cycles of the God's people. But this is actually the core of it is everyone did what was right in their own eyes. So that doesn't have to be sin even. That's just true. Chaos comes from a lack of direction. And a very simple example of that, if you ever have been to a traffic light when the power's out, it's chaotic. And in America, mildly chaotic. Wait till you get in a third world country with no traffic light. It is insanity because life requires direction. So because of that, God has designed life with the principle of leadership. And in our verse, it begins in the last heading of these various tribes. And of Naphtali, there was 1,000 captains. And that's how the grouping begins. It's going to talk about all these guys, warriors, all the great things they did. But it starts with 1,000 captains. The captain is literally one who directs the troops. It was the captain. He's going to tell them where and when and how they are going to battle. In the Old Testament, we have the principle in the book of Judges, a judge. That term, that was the leadership principle in the book of Judges, to pronounce sentence, but it means to govern or to rule. And then in the New Testament, the principle is pastor. Pastor is not a title. It's not just a term of respect. You are literally saying shepherd. What you are saying when you say Pastor Greg, Pastor Jesse, Pastor Zeeman, Pastor Hart, you are saying you in some way provide direction in our congregation, because that you have to have it. And where there is no one in charge of providing direction, chaos results. As a matter of fact, Pastor Mitchell used to often say, I don't know if you know, that there's a style of congregational leadership that's called congregational. You've heard of this, the congregational church. The idea behind that is no one's in charge. But that's a lie. As Pastor Mitchell said, when no one is in charge, the person with the strongest personality winds up being in charge. Always. So, because you can't have it. It's just not going to work. So, this is a need in actually all areas of life. So, leadership, these men here, 1,000 captains, but leadership has requirements. Number one, leaders must care. In our other series that we're kind of working on from the Old Testament there, we did this, is when God chose the priests. This is not just a position. See, leadership, there are guys that they cannot wait to be in charge of something. But it's not a position. It's not an ego issue. A leader is someone who makes decisions and does what's best for other people because you care. That is the purpose of it. In the Old Testament, remember this? We looked at the priests. Is God had a stone representing each tribe, 12 stones. Where did you carry those stones? Over your heart. Because God is saying that's leadership. If you don't care, chaos. I have spent a great deal of time. I was up this morning. I have to deal with people who, to them, it is an ego position, and they do not act for people, and that is just chaotic. Number two, leaders must take responsibility. This is actually the scary part of leadership, of why some people would not want to be a leader, is because you become responsible for other people. It's not just you live your life, I make my decisions, and what affects me, is you now have people will expect things from you. I get up early in the morning. I normally get up 4:30 in the morning, and I know that when I wake up, there will either be texts, emails, phone calls, because people are expecting things from me because I'm a leader. And the other side of the coin is that when you're a leader, people blame you. You get blamed for all kinds of things. It's wonderful. It must be nice to be able to live life and nothing be your fault, because you have somebody else to blame. So that's the issue. And then, of course, leaders must work. So this is the part of leadership. In a business sense, a leader is what? A manager, a supervisor. A manager, a supervisor, a leader is someone who doesn't just do their own work. Now they get extra work of other people. Someone didn't show up. Someone's causing a problem. Now that's your job. And this is what it is. So, in this text, I just want to point out, leadership must be accepted. Leadership is not something you apply for. Okay? You're never going to find an ad on Craigslist advertising a position for leadership in a godly sense, of course. So, leadership is something that comes to you by the will of God. Paul, he begins his epistles, many of the epistles, they start the same way. I am Paul. He's writing a letter and he's telling them, I am Paul, I am an apostle by the will of God. He says, I have a task, I have a responsibility, and he's telling them, in other words, I didn't apply for this gig. I didn't respond to ZipRecruiter and put my name in for leadership by the will of God. Psalm 78 says, God is the judge. He lifts one up. He puts one down. That is something that God does. And so, because leadership involves responsibility and work, there are people who actually run from leadership. Or in their environment of marriage, parenting, job, ministry, whatever, they will not accept that responsibility. This is true. Gentlemen, if you get married, God calls you the head of the home. That's a responsibility. That is not something cool when you want to eat Thai and your wife wants to eat Mexican that you get to throw in there, woman, I'm the head of the house. Okay? It is simply you now have extra responsibility. And there are men who, they live life by whatever, dear. They don't want the responsibility. It's much easier to let their strong wife run things. They don't want responsibility. Or their children, being a father is a responsibility. That is something. God gives you precious lives in your care. You are responsible for them. It is your job to make decisions that are best for the child, and that, I mean, that can be in a thousand different ways. This can be in on the job, being on the job. If you're a worker, you're supposed to be responsible. Period. I don't care. You sweep the floor. You're supposed to be responsible. That this is my whatever I'm told to do. I am going to do it the best. But there are guys that don't want to do that. To them, it's like, you know, how can I skate? How can I get out of work? So they don't want responsibility. And then, of course, in ministry, this is true in ministry, that it requires work. If you're going to lead, if you're going to lead a band, you're going to lead drama, you're going to lead any kind of ministry, an impact team, an outreach, you are responsible. And you better live like it. It's not enough. It drives me crazy. Guys that won't work at what they're in charge of. And then they want to blame other people when it doesn't go well. That's just not acceptable. So there are men who don't want to accept the responsibility. So leadership has to be accepted. If God makes it clear that you are supposed to lead in some way, whether you are if you're married, you are if you're a father, it may be on your job, and then in the church or in ministry, God makes this clear, you have to accept it. Saul was a picture of a man. What did he originally do? He hid from responsibility, right? He's out looking for donkeys one day. The man of God pours oil on his head, says, guess what? You are chosen to be king. And apparently that did not fill him with glee. Because then on coronation, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Saul. Where is he? He's hiding. But that's true for many men, is they are hiding. It's easier to do a so-so job so no one asks you to then supervise or take care of things. It's easier to let your wife run things. Whatever, dear. It's easier to let your wife discipline the kids and take responsibility. It's easier just to attend and, you know, kind of be a little lax and let somebody else carry all the work. That's easier. Leadership has to be accepted. And of course, this text doesn't tell us all that went on when the captains of Naphtali were chosen to be captains. But I can tell you from personal experience, this is something, when you understand what leadership is all about, there really is, you have to make a choice to accept it. When I was young and dumb, I thought leadership was a position. I couldn't wait to have a title or a position. And then over time, life and God kicked my butt, and I understood life a little differently. But then in South Africa, it became clear that God was arranging my life for leadership. And I want to tell you that I wrestled with that, because it dawned on me. When people are coming to me, they're asking me questions, and I realize these people are going to make a choice that will affect their entire lives, their families, their future. Pastor, what do you think? And I'm like, oh my God, that is big. This is not just cool, like, pastor. I'm going to affect people's lives. And I was like, oh God, I don't want to do this, because this is heavy. But I had to come to a point. God spoke to me one day in prayer, and I said, all right, God, if that's what you want, I'll do that. Now, I thought that was just going to be in South Africa. And then one day, my father came to South Africa and told me his plan for the future, that he wanted me to take over the whole fellowship. It's like, you are sick, right? This is not, that is not acceptable, because I understand what's involved. I know what's going to happen. I've seen it work out in my, but it's like, if that is what God is going to do, and I told him, I don't think that really will work out. I think you'll change your mind. We'll see that that's a foolish idea, but I'll do it. It has to be accepted. Listen to me. In leadership, you cannot refuse to lead in one area and then choose leadership in another area. Leadership is not a buffet. There is no golden corral of leadership. You cannot say, yeah, I don't really want to work on my marriage, but boy, I would like to be a man of God. It doesn't work that way. You cannot say, yeah, I'm not really going to take responsibility for the kids, but let God use my life. Listen, you must accept responsibility of leadership wherever God brings it to you. And only by accepting leadership in one area, then it will work in another area and another area and another area. So accepting leadership. Second thought, let's talk about accepting your place. The Bible is such a fascinating book. It gives such depth. We just read four verses. I don't know, it took Isaac a minute and a half to read it maybe. But there is, I know from experience, the depth that is here. One of the things that it happens is you often have people that are lumped together. But it's actually by God, it's deliberate, because that's how life works. So, in our text, it lists numbers of people, actually numbers of tribes, and tells you, 28,600, 37,400, there were a lot of people here, but it lumps them together, different people in different roles. So, here's the second thing about leadership in life. We can't all do the same thing. You cannot. Right? You ever see this in politicians or in schools? They'll have this. Everybody's in charge. Everybody's in charge is the same as nobody's in charge. No, that's not going to work. It's impossible. If you have someone who is a captain who leads, you have to have people who follow. That's a very, there are guys who they self-appoint. They would call themselves a leader. And the old saying in life, he who leadeth and no one followeth is merely taking a walk. So if you are leading, you must have someone follow. Did I give verse 34? I'll read it. It says, with them, with shield and spear, 37,000. So how does verse 34 begin? And there were 1,000 captains of Naphtali. Okay, here's a tribe. Now those guys are in charge. And the very next thing says, and there were 37,000 also of Naphtali who were not captains. Because that's how life works. It has to work in that way. So, this is the problem in our society and school, and we can get political about this, but there are people that they resent differences in place and purpose. This bothers them. Like, why do they have to be in charge? They think they're full of themselves. You can make the rules and tell us what to do? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly, it just has to be. There is no choice in life about this. So there are people that resent this. I pastored in Australia. In Australia, very much, it's called an egalitarian society, or egalitarian society. And so what that means is they believe that everybody should be equal. Anybody who rises, tall poppy syndrome, pull it down. American version would be what is it called, Dwayne?
Crabology,
pulling down. You don't want anybody to rise above you. And so I can tell you through the years, every single person I ever pastored who resented differences did not do well. They struggled spiritually. They'd be fighting, how come? Why did he? And they would struggle on the job. They struggled in ministry. They struggled in salvation. They struggled in pastoring. Because God says, captains, follow, They go together. You have to have that. So people who resent differences, of course, it makes you distracted. Here's Jesus Christ risen from the dead, talking about your future. Peter, feed my sheep. I'm restoring your lives. You would think he'd be going, oh my God, thank you. Then he's like, what about John? What's he going to do? That is so classic, because I see this. This is what happens at every conference. Every conference, there are people that God is speaking. Their lives are being transformed. And there are people going, why did he get to report? How come he's preaching? Right? Which is, of course, envy. But it distracts you. I get people, they're obsessed with their being used by God. And I know that they have flaws. No kidding. They're human. That doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to work that out. But they're obsessed with other people, totally distracted. I see people destroyed because of distraction. And they're resentful. That's envy, in that they're actually angry when someone is used. So the first real key of usefulness is actually not be a leader. It actually is find your place. That's how you are used by God. So in life, at this moment in time, and ultimately, what is it God is calling you to do? Okay, so we talk about calling. We say that's ultimate. Some of you here, I believe God's called me to pastor. Some called me to evangelize. God's called me to be a missionary. That's ultimate. But right now, what is God calling you to do? Because that is a very important principle that you have to do. So, or we could say another way is, where can you serve and be a blessing? Okay, did I get verse 37?
Yes.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Of the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh from the other side of the Jordan, 120,000 armed for battle with every kind of weapon of war.
Okay, so now this is a placement issue. So we have guys who they had to fulfill a role on the other side of Jordan. Okay, so this is the whole point of having a captain, right? The captain says, your task is here. You guys, your task is here. That's what God does in our lives, is that we, some of that may be common sense. I'd like to get involved in ministry. Okay, find a place. It's really not my job to tell you, you should sing like Mariah Carey, and I don't even know if you can sing. That's not my place. It's your job to find a place. Where can you be a blessing? Very profound yesterday. I don't know if you were at Ike's funeral yesterday, but what Gary Marsh said was powerful. He said, Ike Cook served God with his back, with his brains, right? With his skills. Ike Cook found a place. Ike Cook never fought with Pastor Mitchell about who should be in charge. Why do you have to be the pastor? No, I have a place, and he did his best and blessed us all. But that's life works that way. There are guys who they think that their calling is leadership someday, but they don't find a place right now. They don't accept their place. They're chafing. How come I can't be in charge? When am I going to be in charge? Why don't you just find a place and be the best that you can be? Because that is, you discover those who accept their place are the ones that God says, okay, I can take you onto a different role. Second key of usefulness after you find your place is be the best that you can be in your place. So in our text, it gives and it lumps together a number of men. It says twice, expert in war. These guys were expert in war. These guys were expert in war. These guys, it says, with all instruments or weapons of war. And we actually talked about that in others. But the point, expert in war, these guys got really good. Their job wasn't to be the captain, but they got really, really good at what they did. Listen, gentlemen, if you work a job, you should be the best worker on your job. Nobody should outwork you if you're a man of God. Period. I don't care what you do. You should make your boss cry if you ever leave. Your boss should be sad if your boss sings goodbye devil so long when you tell him you're leaving, there's something wrong. You simply, that's how you should approach life. So this is the problem, is again, guys, they're lazy butts on their job, but they're waiting for the day when I suddenly say, ladies and gentlemen, the Lord has revealed to me, come on down, man of God. Yeah, thank you, thank you. But the guys who work with them go, that's slug. We got to do his work for him. That will never work. That's true in every single area of life. You should be the best husband that you can be. You can do this. You know, the dumb joke, you can't work out what a woman wants. Of course you can. She told you 7,000 times. She'll tell you exactly what she wants. So you can do this. Read a book. Pray. Get some help. You can be a father. You can be a good father. You should be the best at what you do. If you're in a band, you should be the best. Everything I've ever gotten, man, is I gave my all to it. I worked my butt off in a band. I gave, you know, stayed up late at night. I spent my lunch hours working on songs or practicing or whatever we had to do to be the best, or drama. What, you know, whatever it is. Ecclesiastes 9:10.
Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going.
Okay, listen to this translation. Whatever you do, whatever work you do, do your best. Okay, that's the real key. Some people will be called to be leaders. Others will not. Maybe you'll be called at a later point. But everything comes back to find your place, be your best. Last thought, hearts that make impact. Our text reminds us that the work of God is actually all about the heart. It is actually not about talent. It's not about program, or there are guys who, when they resent differences, they think it's all politics. It's all politics, man. It's all politics. It's not. It's a heart issue. Verse 38.
All these men of war who could keep ranks came to Hebron with a loyal heart to make David king over all Israel, and all the rest of Israel were of one mind to make David king.
Okay, loyal heart. What translation is that? New King James?
Yes.
New King James. So King James says perfect heart. Every time you read the word perfect in the Bible, in the King James, what word should pop in your head? Complete, exactly. So it does not mean sinless. They didn't come with a sinless heart. If so, we should all quit today. It's not possible, apparently, in this lifetime. I'm working on that. I'm working on that perfection thing. Imperfectly, apparently. So they came with a complete heart, or they gave all their heart. You know what they did? These men were wholly or completely committed to God's will and their purpose in God's will. Listen, gentlemen, some of you let the devil mess with your head because you are aware you have flaws. I'm never going to be used. I'm doomed because I have flaws. There's problems around that. Listen, God can use flawed people who are wholehearted. Okay? Flawed people, but they're wholehearted. They will give their best. God can work with that. So, wholeheartedness is all about finding what God wants and then aiming your whole life at it. 1 Corinthians 16:15. Okay, devoted, that's probably King James or other translation. I actually like the King James of that scripture. The house of Stephanas, they have addicted themselves to the ministry. They're addicts. They're jonesing, right? That is the real issue. And this is true. Some of you, of course, there's negative addictions that destroyed your life, but there are some addictions in life that are a lot of fun. Coffee is one of them. I must confess that I am addicted to good coffee. I will search it out. Steve Bowman, he's with me there. Good food. You know, I like there are people here. I love in the morning when we start talking about food with Pastor Diego. His eyes light up. Food is not just something like, yeah, we have to eat. It's like we are devoted. You know, Jonathan, I have people that like, whatever they're addicted to, is they aim their life. We're finding it. We're researching on the net. We're working. But that's true about the will of God. It drives me crazy that guys say that they want to be used by God, but they're addicted. They're not even mildly interested. They say, yeah, I guess I could. And they're like, yeah, sort of. I sort of could show. No, listen. When you find out what God wants, when everything changed when I felt called, is I became addicted. I am aiming my life. Every decision, that is all that I want in life, is to do the will of God. God told me what to do. Therefore, I give it my best and give my all. And so, if you do that, look at the results. In our text, wholeheartedness pleases God. We're reading about people, they've been dead for thousands of years, but God said, write this down. Why? Because it makes him happy when people are wholehearted. Number two, it helps someone else enter their destiny. This is part of being a disciple. This is part of helping your brother in different ways. What the sum total of this verse is, they helped David find his destiny. That's the truth in life. When you live life, I get from time to time, I get guys that on the field, I don't know them. They will ask me a question somewhere, or they will send me an email and I'll respond. I'll take time to give them resources, answer their questions and whatever. And they're like, wow, you know, I thought you'd be too. But in life, I enjoy helping other people enter their destiny. Life is not about, I have arrived to a position. How can I help you? Isn't that what part of discipleship is? I come every morning and drink coffee that I'm not addicted to. Sorry, Zach, I love you, but it's just not. You see me, I rarely eat the food here, but I am making room so that I can, if you ask me a question, I'll answer it because I'm investing in you. I get up on a Sunday morning here. Come here. I could be lounging with a paper and drinking good coffee. But, and again, sorry, Zach. But so, but that is what you do. Is it's a joy in life to help somebody out. How can you succeed? Right? Some people are like protected. They don't want to help anybody else. They're afraid of other people succeeding, and that's not helpful. Number three, it helps other people. By them helping David, David helped the whole nation. That, at the end of the day, is how can I help someone's life, and then you inspire others. Final verse, verse 38. Can I give that to somebody?
I read it once.
Read it again, Blaine. You read it good, too.
It's the coffee.
It's the coffee.
All these men of war who could keep ranks came to Hebron with a loyal heart and made David king over all Israel. All the rest of Israel were of one mind to make David king.
Okay. Of one mind, or another translation, of one heart, to make David king. So there's a what happened is these guys, 1 Chronicles 12 is the list of the warrior, they're the warrior dudes, but the Bible says that they inspired other people because these guys were into it and they helped David, they fought, they were expert and accepted responsibility and leadership, etc., etc. Other people said, you know what, I'm in. I want to be in like them. That is what you want to do in life. Okay, let's open for questions. Something you want to ask. Nate.
Pastor Greg, how do you your very best when you're exhausted or defeated? How do you maintain this being that drive?
Well, number one, Nate, is the old saying, most of the world's work is done by people who are tired. So there's a balance to that. So number one, of course, you know, life is hard. You work a job, you got your kids and then ministry, et cetera, et cetera. So number one, we understand that you will be tired. There's no, you know, I'm tired most of the time. That's just life. On the other hand, then balance. You do have to have balance. Where the Bible says that Jesus, he said, come apart for a while. Let's take a break. There are times where, no, I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm taking my wife out to lunch. I'm taking my wife out to dinner. I'm going to go hang out with her. You know, whatever. We're taking a break. And that can be a literal break. Part of that is balance of, I tell guys, you cannot be in 15 ministries at the same time. It's just not going to work. It's impossible. And you should not think that you are a lousy man of God because you don't accept every opportunity that comes your way. It's, do the math. How many hours do you have free a week? You clearly cannot be involved in 15 ministries. So pick one. Give it your best. Work with people in the meantime. You know. So, and that's common sense, isn't it? I growing up in school, I actually won awards for drama. But then when I became a disciple, I got involved in bands. I never mess with drama. I love it. That's a blast to me to, and you get when I pull faces and all that, you can see it in there. But I can't do band and drama too. It's just not going to work. And that's true at other things. I can't be band, drama, choir, follow up. Yeah, you just can't do everything. So those create balance. But then even if you pick one and you give it your best, you're still going to be tired. Because life is tiring. Working a job, it all depends on, you know. I worked an hour each way most days. You know, so traveling, then I'm driving in the sun, I'm doing a physical labor, so I'm tired. And then, you know, then you have your ministry, your wife, your house duties, whatever you're supposed to do. So all of those, you put those together. And in that, you recognize in yourself, a lot of it is I take care of myself when I am spiritually depleted. That's a different thing. So I was in South Africa. I'm jet lagging, you know, and jet lag, they say east is the beast when you go east. I had wicked jet lag. And then my problem is I was juggling multiple chainsaws. I wake up in the middle of the night. So I was stinking tired. Then I come home and I have jet lag and I'm still juggling chain, you know. So that's a part of it. That is not the same as spiritual depletion. There are times when I am battling or I'm giving out, I'm preaching. And this is a spiritual exhaustion. My answer is I am taking time out to do nothing but read my Bible and spend time with God. Now, I got a hot day. It's me and God. I'm not doing anything but read. I will read because I am recharging myself. So I recognize, is this jet lag? Is this tiredness? Is this sickness? Or is this spiritual? And for me, the spiritual often, I get irritated and snappy when I'm spiritually depleted more than tiredness. So I recognize that. And partly my wife is like, she's, you know, I will kill you if you talk to me like that again. Like, maybe I should change. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. Good. Good question. Devin.
How do you learn to recognize it?
Yeah, in everything, how do you learn to recognize it? When your wife hits you with a baseball bat, that's a good sign. I'm sensing you're upset. No, in everything, you know, how many times, if you come to breakfast, how many times a week is my answer, you pray for wisdom? Right? You ask me about marriage, ministry, money, you know, working, follow-up, preaching, pastoring, being a leader, and my answer is pray for wisdom. Pray for wisdom. What you do, pray for wisdom. That's my number one. I start every day, I open up my scriptures that I pray over, and I begin my day by saying, God, this is what your word says. I need you to do this to me. I need to hear from heaven today. I'm given this day. You've got to speak to me. Guide me. I'm trusting in you with all my heart. And you said that. What would you, you know, so on and on and on. So I ask God. That's the main thing. Then, of course, but what I said is true. You, wisdom in life, you know, was it Andy Stanley says, pay attention to the tension. There are guys who don't do that. That's a part of a skill. It's like, you, in life you learn that. It's like, you know, when I told that lady, wow, you've really put on weight, you look like a whale. And she socked me in the eye. I was like, no, I don't think I should do that anymore. There are guys who never learn that lesson. They don't pick up on tension. They don't learn wisdom in some ways, so they keep on making the same mistakes. So that's another part. If I pray for wisdom, then I look at what worked, what didn't work in life. When did people respond well? When did they respond not well? What did I say different in those things? You know. So you've got to analyze. You've got to be a thinker. You can't succeed in life unless you're a thinker. That's another part. David.
When you're choosing a ministry in the church that you want, like you said, people want to stick to it for a time, how important is it for you to pick the right one?
You know, David, I don't think that it really is. I just think that whichever one you pick, give it your best and stick to it. That's the real issue. So it's not God in heaven going, drama, are you out of your mind? You know, there was some other holy ministry. I don't think so. I think just whichever one you pick. When I moved to Australia, they had a need. The drummer they discovered was still smoking. And they thought maybe that wasn't the best for a Christian band. So, kid, you could play drums. And that was, I just got in. I didn't really make a holy pick, but I just stuck with music from then on, you know. So I don't think so, David. There's needs everywhere. We need people to do everything. But then back to the choosing is, those of you with rejection issues who hate to say no, you struggle, don't you? Because there are constantly, I need you in my band, I need you in my play, I need you in my drama, I need you. And you hate to say no, so you say yes to everybody, and you wind up hating yourself. Because you just don't have the ability. It's like, do the math, I can't. Nope, can't do it. No, dude, I really need, no, I can't. Sorry, can't. I'm here. I want to stay married. That's a key. Right? And then some of you, of course, have the luxury if you, I must say that one of the great blessings, one of the reasons why I stuck with music is I could do it with my wife. That was very helpful to me. So it wasn't like I do my ministry, she does her ministry, and then, you know, we only have 37 minutes and 42 seconds in the entire week to spend time together. So that was, if you can choose, maybe find something you can do together that might help you. But of course, we can't all do that, right? Somebody else.
Pastor, back to just in the leadership, what's the difference between, or making sure, like delegating something to someone and not being lazy, like the difference between having someone do something for you, but it's actually delegating, not being lazy, not letting them just take care of it?
Yeah, well, okay, delegation, that probably is a whole lesson I should do someday, but delegation, first of all, is common sense. I don't have enough time to do everything. I cannot. It's physically impossible. So I recognize that. Secondly, delegation does not mean the loss of responsibility. Right. Okay. Right, there are guys that they want to delegate. I told him to do it. Yeah, but it didn't get done. But I told you to do it. Yeah, but I told him. No, that's not going to work. You can delegate, but it's still your responsibility. That's the second part. And thirdly is there needs to be a common sense reason why can't you, right? So in doing that, you have to, that then makes the best chance. I have different members on staff because I physically cannot. It is a physical impossibility. I need you to come pray for grandma in Phoenix in the hospital. I can't. That's just not going to work. I have no time, right? Pastor Greg, can you make me a flyer for that? Yeah, it'd take me 6 months, but I can get it done. That would be dumb. Steven could do it, and you know, he could do it in minutes. What I could spend on days, it would still suck, right? So it doesn't make sense. That makes common sense. But at the end of the day, then I'm still responsible as well. I oversee it, So in that, if it's just simply, I don't want to do my work, I could, and I have the time, but it's easier to get somebody else to do it, then that's laziness, right? Somebody else. Bill.
Have you seen a correlation between guys who get in tons of ministries and avoiding maybe a bad marriage at home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yep, it's an escape syndrome. But anything you escape catches you in the end. You never truly escape.
Yeah.
Right? And that's always the, you know, it's the same. The principle in life is always better to deal with things when they're small. Right? I'd rather deal with a spider when it's that big than came outside and there's tarantulas come out. Yeah, like, those are nasty, man. Any spider that can shave, that's wrong. So, but my. I get sidetracked by spiders, but yeah. So the mistake guys make is if I just push this away, don't deal with it, it'll somehow take care of it, and it doesn't. It all it does is then instead of having a small problem, you have a nuclear explosion, and this doesn't make sense. So yes, I have. Anybody else? Thinking. Good. All right. That's it.